And now, more tips with your host, Rebecca, on lifestyle improvement.
And remember that in our program, we present our opinion and the opinion of our guest, and it's not to be interpreted as medical advice.
Thank you for tuning in to Lifestyle Improvement today for part two of our interview with Kate Wild. Kate Wild is the author of the book, Autistic Logistics, A Parent's Guide to Tackling Bedtime, Toilet Training, Tantrums, Hitting, and Other Everyday Challenges. Ms. Wild is also the director of the Sunrise Program and has worked at the Autism Treatment Center of America for over 20 years.
I think the key of what you said is to help them reach their highest potential. And that is the mystery, right?
Yeah, that's right. And we don't know what that is or where that is. So let's be one step ahead of our children and let's really show them that they can do anything that they want.
I think you kind of talked and touched a little bit upon that just with the definition of what we just talked about and the importance of connection, relating to each other and the families and how you work with them. But you also talk about the importance of motivation in your book. And I'm sure that is just totally integrated among all that, because when you relate to somebody, when you think that they care about you and you care about them, when you can trust them, then you're motivated to be involved in their lives and to please them. And right?
If you feel a sense of love from another person, then you're more like, and you trust them, then you're more likely to do what they're asking to do. I think that for our children, because I know I touched briefly on their own sensory experience. So let's say their experience in the world is very chaotic. You know, they have sounds and sights and their smells and everything is really, really different. So it's haphazard. It's not as organized as it is for us. And in some sense, it can feel dangerous for them, right? Because they don't know when there's suddenly a loud noise is going to come. So they feel very protected. They go inside of themselves, which you see because they stop looking at you. They do their repetitious activities. Some of your listeners will know that as stims. We actually call it isms, right? But they go inside of themselves because the world is so ununderstandable. They need to create something that is understandable. So they go towards objects. Then you have people and we're trying the best that we can, right? But we are very unpredictable because sometimes we let them play with their toys. Sometimes we don't. Sometimes we scream. Sometimes we sing. Sometimes we smile. So now, and sometimes we come in and hug them. That might not feel so good to them, right? Sometimes we pick them up and stick them in the bath and do all sorts of things. And it happens out of the blue. So now our children have to protect themselves against us as well, right? So if we can create ourselves not only to have a sense of really love and enjoyment and understanding of them, but also we can create ourselves as to give them control and become predictable, is that we won't touch them unless they see us coming, right? So they know it's going to happen. We'll explain to them what we're going to do and we'll be as consistent as their objects are, right? That, though, the combination of both of them, giving control and really loving them, two strong components of the Sunrise Program, that's when they can trust us because they know that we're not going to do something out of the blue or all of a sudden.
Wow, that is huge. To be consistent as their objects are.
It definitely is. And I don't think it's what we as human beings really think about on an everyday basis. And I'm sure your listeners aren't. For two reasons. One is we're so busy getting on with our life, right? And the other is we don't know what it's like to have autism. We don't really take into consideration every moment what their experience. Their experience is so radically different from ours. But I think that if we thought about it for a moment and really came from that perspective, then I think that would help us slow down and really become predictable, because their objects are really predictable. Because if they put their object down, whatever it might be, if they like to hold a ball or a figurine, they put it down, it stays there. It doesn't follow them around. It never shouts at them. It doesn't try and get their sweater off. Then our children go towards their objects more because they're so predictable. So part of the book is becoming predictable by giving control. And then our children don't have to defend against us. We have this space where they can come towards us and start to do things that are challenging for them, like sit on the potty or have their teeth cleaned or get dressed or whatever it might be.
On that same vein, one very interesting and extremely important subject that you touched upon in your book was pushing buttons. How to recognize them, and more importantly, how to deal with them at a personal level so they don't control your responses. Expand on that.
I just love this chapter full stop, because I think we all do it in our lives. So when we talk about button pushing, we're talking about when our children do things, and the reason behind it is just to see our reactions, right? So, and I think that everybody listening will understand this in some way. So your child might pee on the floor, but they're not looking at the pee. They're looking straight in your eyes and see, what's mommy going to do about that? Or they get a pen and they're looking at you the whole time as they slowly go towards the wall, and they're going to do a big black marker mark all the way over the wall. Now, they're not interested in looking at the marker on the wall. They're interested in looking at you, because any moment now you're going to go, you're going to shout and scream and yell, and your voice is going to get high. And they want to see us light up like a Christmas tree, right? Go a little, have fun like that. Become an animated character from a movie. Your typical children do that all the time. You know, you're sitting in the back of the car and you're bored, right? And I used to do this with my brother. You know, I'd get my finger and I'd start prodding his shoulder. Not because I wanted to prod his shoulder, because I wanted him to scream and yell, get really mad. Because it felt powerful for me. Oh, I can change someone in some sense. And again, our children don't have a lot of control over their lives, right? So they're using this. And also, we can be really fun as parents and caregivers when people are pushing our buttons. We can be a little entertaining, right? Or a lot entertaining, I should really say. The sign for this, and something for you to look at, is that when your child does a particular thing, whether it's drawing on the wall or on the wall or peeing, or I've had children who say things to me like, you know, when I'm 18, I'm going to come in, I'm going to smoke, and I'm going to smoke all over your clothes, right? The particular person I'm thinking about had an English accent, so that's why I said that, right? But so if they're looking at you, right, and then smiling at your reaction, you know they're doing it to push your button. The thing to do there, right, that's the sign, is that they're looking at you and maybe smirking a little bit. Or maybe they do something in another room and they come in and tell you, I just made a mess, Mom. I just peed on the floor in the living room, Mom. So that they, because they need your reaction, right, to see it. So they announce it to you, or they follow you to keep looking at your reaction. That's the sign that you're looking for. Not all of the behaviors I'm saying are that. It's the key that they're looking at you. The thing to really do there is what we call deactivate the button, which is to feel, you got to feel relaxed, right? On the inside and on the outside. So when your child's peeing on the floor and looking at you for your reaction, you want to take away your reaction. So if you have a straight face, you want to keep your face straight. If you're already smiling, keep smiling. The idea is, don't change. And inside also, take a deep breath and try and relax. And the thought that might help here is like, if I react or I get uptight, that I'm just going to have more pee on the floor. So I really want to soften any beliefs I have about pee on the floor. And one thing you might think to yourself is, okay, so it's just another pee on the floor. All right, I can clean it up later. Right, no one's going to die. It's not the end of the world. I've already had three more peas on the carpet. What's one more pea? Right, really see in just soften your thoughts about it. But one thing you can know is if you keep getting uptight and reacting to it, they're going to keep on peeing.
So put it in perspective.
Yes, put it in perspective in some sense that nothing terrible is happening right now. Your child is just very clever, and which all our children are, and that they're just wanting to be entertained by you. Now, the flip side of that is, so I'm going to try and relax my internal and my external environment. And the flip side is, as soon, you know, maybe 5 minutes, you want to start looking for something your child does that you can give a big reaction to, right? Because that's what your child wants. They want the big reaction. So let's say they come over and they hold your hand, or they say a sound, or they're just sitting quietly, or maybe they're engaged in something. Then you want to, or they actually pee in the toilet, right? Then you want to give a big reaction. And I mean a really huge reaction, right? In terms of celebration. Maybe you put your arms in the air, you do a little dance, So now if they want a reaction from you, if they want to see you jump up and down and get excited and be all animated like a character, you do it for the things that you want them to continue to do. And what we see again and again is they start doing the things you want them to do. Because generally what we do is we give more reactions to things we don't want versus the things that we do. And you just want to flip that, switch that for yourself.
That makes a lot of sense. That definitely does.
I practice that in my everyday life with adults and typical people as well.
So let me give you now some of the most common issues that a parent may have difficulties with, and maybe you can give some suggestions. So I'm going to just throw an issue or a problem to you, and then you tell me how you would address it. Hitting and pinching.
Well, the first thing that I address in the book Autistic Logistics is really having an understanding why our children are hitting us.
This is your host, Rebecca, and now we will take a short break, and we will be right back with more ideas on lifestyle improvement.
Specialized approach to spinal care is what you will find in the Advanced Spinal Care Clinic in Graham, Washington. Here's Dr. Craig Lipinski explaining why Nuka Care is unlike any other treatment.
Our goal is that we're making a specialized correction to the skull, the atlas, and the neck of each individual that is custom made or custom and specific created to get them healthy and then have them stay that way.
One of only 23 board certified Nuka practitioners in the world, Dr. Craig Lipinski offers you care that can significantly impact your health in positive ways.
This week we've seen somebody in here who's had a 50-point drop in blood pressure by having the skull, atlas, and neck corrected to a proper position.
To find out more about how Nuka Care can change your life, visit www.nuccawashington.com or call 253-445-8181.
Well, the first thing that I address in the book Autistic Logistics is really having an understanding why our children are hitting us. And it's not for reasons that people think. They don't want to hurt us. They're not trying to be mean to us, even though sometimes it feels like they are. But there tend to be four very specific reasons why our children hit. One is they're trying to communicate to us. They find that the world moves much faster if they hit somebody or pinch, right? They get what they want quicker. So they're just trying to communicate. The other is button push. I hit somebody and they go crazy. And I'm finding that entertaining. The other one is, as we talked about before, our children have a lot of sensory challenges. And what can happen with some children is they have such a buildup of energy in their body that it becomes very overwhelming for them. And they can't regulate it or get rid of it in the same ways that we can. So often what happens is they come over and they squeeze us. It feels like a pinch. Maybe they squeeze our cheeks or our arms, or they bite us. And actually, when you bite something or squeeze something intensely, it helps your body relax. And it's just their way of regulating their energy. The fourth way is that they're trying to protect themselves, because, you know, very well-meaning people in their lives are actually stopping them from doing something that they feel is essential, or that they've kept saying no to something and people aren't understanding the no, or they just are pushing their agenda. And then sometimes the only way to get us to stop is if they bonk us on the head, suddenly it kind of knocks sense into us a little bit. And then they stop. Those are the four reasons. First of all, you want to find out which one your child is hitting for. Then sometimes you might be in both two in different times, your child's doing it for different reasons. So let's say you notice that your child is doing it for the reason they've got a lot of energy in their bodies and they can't regulate it. The signs you'll see for that is your child might start jumping up and down more, or speaking more loudly, or eating more, making that sound, straining their face. And that's a sign they have a lot of energy they're trying to regulate, and that they might come and pinch you. If you see that, the first thing you want to do is go to them and offer them squeezes. So instead of waiting for them to come and squeeze or bite you, you go to them, and I would suggest you take their hands and squeeze them fairly strongly all the way up their arms, or take them and see if you can help jump them really strongly on a small trampoline, squeeze their feet, squeeze their head. Sometimes their jaw is really important to squeeze. And so what you're doing, and you'll see, and I see children again and again, they're then they're calming, helping them calm down. So you're doing it before they get to that level. That really helps.
So how about picky eaters?
I love picky eaters. We once had a child here, and they came all the way from England, actually. And they had shipped, they came with 2 bags full of chocolate chip cookies, because their child only ate chocolate chip cookies, actually. And it had to be a certain brand, which I know your listeners are going to totally understand. It has to be a certain brand. And if you try and fake it with your child and you buy a different brand, they know. They know before even tasting it that it's a different brand. And they were terrified of running out of chocolate chip cookies, because, I mean, what was going to happen, right? And actually, they did run out in the first week, which we were kind of happy about, because then we had a time to really help him learn to eat other foods, which he did, actually. By the end of the second week, he'd learned to eat 6 new foods, because there were none of the cookies around. The 2 particular things that really helped him, I know, and helped so many children that come here to the Autism Treatment Center of America, that they come for a week long, and they eat a vegetable or broccoli or a new food, 1 or 2 new foods. So many stories I have of that. The first place to start really is to give control, right? That's why I talk about it so strongly in the book, because usually when we want to give our child a new food, what do? We put it on a fork or a spoon and we shove it in our child's face, close to our child's face. Eat this, come on. Da-da-da-da. And if somebody was sticking a fork in our face, what's the first thing we would do is we would push it away and then look at it. Do I want this? Do I not want this? Right? So the first step is, instead of going towards your child with the fork or the food, just, you know, sit at the table and hold the spoon out in front of you, but not near your child, and have your child under their own pace come towards it and check it out. And often when we do that, and we might say something, "Ooh, look at this yummy piece of pineapple. Ooh, yummy, yummy," right? We might say excited, wonderful things about it, and we just hold it still. And what I find is our child might run around and come and investigate it and then go away and then come back. And sometimes it might take 4 or 5 times for them to investigate it before they touch it, before they put it to their mouth. But often in our experience, what I've seen again and again is if I start moving towards them, they move further away, right? So that's the first step is there's getting our children to eat. We can't make that happen. That's totally within their control. We can't force them to do that. So we have to give them control around it. To trust that you're not going to force it and that you're going to be okay if they say no, right? So then what I would do is I would get lots and lots of different bowls of food and put them around the house in easy access to them, right? Of different foods that you would want them to eat, whatever that might be. So what you want to do is have them very readily available so your children can come towards them on their own space, have them around. But every now and then, pick them up and eat them yourself. Like, and show delight and excitement. Oh, this is the best green bean I've ever had. It's delicious. It's fantastic. Right? Really have fun with that. So if you want your child to eat vegetables, you kind of got to love vegetables yourself, right? Because why is it? It won't be inviting for them to come towards it if you don't really love it. You want to show your enjoyment big time. And then you want to have fun with the food, which is often people don't do, because food, you have to sit at the table. And a lot of our children don't want to sit at the table. Bring it into play. See if you can lose some inhibitions about what food's supposed to be used for. So if your children like trains, put it on their Thomas the Tank trains, and it can be a broccoli train. Choo-choo! And it's not really about eating. It's about putting it in objects that they like so that they might have fun with that. And then they might want to touch it and put it on, right? So they're getting closer and closer to the food. You can roll peas, like they're little balls, backwards and forwards. You can play pea bowling or something like that. You could have fun with carrot sticks that can become drums or microphones.
Well, wonderful. Those are really wonderful ideas. How about sleeping problems?
Oh, sleep. I'm sure there are many, many listeners who haven't slept in many years. And, you know, I've just got so many emails and stories from people who've read my book, and they've emailed me saying that their children are now asleep. I got some photographs too of sleeping children. If you read the chapter on autistic logistics and you decide to do it, it absolutely works. It really, really does. Two things just for your listeners right now that I would say. One is take your children off most sugars. I mean, I worked with a girl who hadn't slept in 7 years. And her parents, understandably, were beside themselves. They were just so tired. The first step we did is we got her off all sugar, not just desserts, but juices, some fruits, stuff like that. That's all we did. She slept through the night within the week. So that's one thing, is to really look at diet. Diet makes a huge difference. The other thing is you want to help your child be able to learn to put themselves to sleep. That's very, very important. And because we have such busy lives as adults and parents, and our children have busy lives too, you know, especially after school, they're going to all these therapy. Sometimes, you know, it's 8 o'clock at night and you say to your child, go to sleep. So at least an hour before you want your child to go to bed, start to set the scene. Quiet down your house, turn off all the TVs, all the iPads, all the phones. If it's winter outside, just dim the lights, put on some very calming music. If it's the summertime, just shut the curtains, because you want to start giving indicators to your child. Ah, okay, now it's time. It's an indicator to our body, if we can do this habitually every day, that, oh, now it's sleepy time. And we would suggest at that time, don't initiate games like chase and tickle and like really revving up games, which can happen sometimes when parents come home after work because they haven't seen their child for a while. I would refrain from doing that. And then go upstairs at least half an hour before you want them to sleep, take a bath, do a routine. So basically what you're doing is you're really helping them get their, you know, their revness down. So by the time they get into bed, they're used to this whole thing of going to sleep. Then, and this is the one that I think that is a really big one also, which is you want to leave their room before they're fully asleep. Because what happens is, and so many parents will relate to this, is that they rock their child till their child's snoring, or they actually fall asleep in bed with their child, right? Because they're so tired and the child takes a long time to fall asleep. But what happens is then our children get up in the middle of the night and they start to cry until you come, or they come get you. And that's mainly because you've become their mechanism to fall asleep. So you want to get out of there before they fall asleep so that they can learn to fall asleep by themselves. So if they wake up in the night, they know how to put themselves to sleep. Very important part.
How can one get in touch with the Autism Treatment Center of America to learn more about the Sunrise program?
Well, we have a free number, a 1-800 number, which isn't actually 1-888. It's 1-877-766-7473. That's 877-766-7473. And you can call our center. Our website is autismtreatment.org or autismtreatment.com. Both work really well. When you call our center, you can speak to one of our program advisors for around 30 minutes about your child, about our programs. And that's totally free. It won't cost you anything to find the best program for you. We have financial aid. We're actually a non-for-profit, so we're a charity. So you can ask for that too. And we want to support as many people and many families as possible. And actually in December, December 14th week, we have our startup program, which is a five-day course where parents come to our campus in Sheffield, Massachusetts without their children. And we cover all lodging and all food. We have a wonderful, wonderful campus, and you'll be with other parents who are going through exactly the same things as you. And we teach you all the fundamentals of the Sunrise program. And we not only cover all the things that I talk about in autistic logistics, but we also cover every aspect of your child's learning and social development.
How often do you have a startup program?
Yeah, we have them 5 times throughout the year. So we have one in December and we have one next year in February. again in April and June. And you can find more information about that on our website or calling us. And I teach in it, as so does Ron Kaufman and other teachers. And it would be really wonderful if I met one of your listeners.
Well, definitely they're going to get a chance to not just listen to the information again, but then go and find out where to get your book. And let's make sure that we tell the listeners again, the name of your book is Autistic Logistics, A Parent Guide to Tackling Bedtime, Toilet Training, Tantrums, Hitting, and Other Everyday Challenges. And they can purchase it at Amazon.com or in your website, which is?
Yes, which is autismtreatment.org.
Or you also have the book website.
Oh, yes, autisticlogistics.com. Yes, thank you so much for reminding me of that, Rebecca.
Absolutely. Before you leave today, person with so much experience, if you had to put it in a little gem of just one thought that you would like the listeners to take with them today, based on all of the cases that you have worked with, the families, all the many people you've helped, what would that be?
I think that's a big question, but I think the first thing that comes into my mind is that you, as the parent, you have everything you need to help your children. You love them more than anybody else. You know them more than anybody else. And I just really would want them to trust themselves that they can help their children and their children want to be helped, want to grow, and can grow.
Thank you for putting that so beautifully. We so appreciate your time today. Kate, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Rebecca, for having me.
And we had the pleasure today to have in Lifestyle Improvement, Kate Wild. She is the director of the Sunrise Program and senior instructor for the Autism Treatment Center of America. And she's also the author of the book, Autistic Logistics, which can be purchased at Amazon.com and also in her website, www.autisticlogistics.com. And remember that in our program, we present our opinion and the opinion of our guest, and it's not to be interpreted as medical advice.
And don't forget to join us again next Sunday morning from 7:30 to 8 for more great tips on lifestyle improvement.